Look at where we are right now. Uncertainty is all around us. You guys have been in business for 25 years. I've been in business for a little bit longer. Uncertainty is here today. It's always been here. Markets are up, markets are down. You know, we got the financial crisis. We've got a worldwide pandemic. Now we've got the tariffs. There's always been something to worry about. But thanks to eMoney, we've already modeled that.
The heart of advice. It's personal. It's pragmatic. Here on the eMoney Heart of Advice podcast, we explore how to navigate both sides to help you take your financial planning practice to the next level. Join us as we speak with financial professionals to learn how they deepen relationships and improve client outcomes.
This podcast contains purely educational information, and nothing discussed may be construed as legal, tax, or financial advice. Please consult a financial advisor for any financial investment or money management questions. All views or opinions represented are solely the opinion of the speaker and do not represent those of eMoney Advisor or any of its affiliates or subsidiaries.
Welcome to the Heart of Advice podcast, presented by eMoney. I'm Sasha Grobbenstetter.
And I'm Connor Sung. We're your eMoney experts. Today on the podcast, we have Patty Brennan. Patty Brennan is a certified financial planner, a certified funds specialist, the CEO of Key Financial Inc., which started in October of 1990, a Georgetown University alum. She serves on the board of the YMCA of the Greater Brandywine, Connect Through Cancer, and Penn Medicine Chester County Hospital Foundation. She's the author of Am I Going to Be Okay? And ex-eMoney Advisory Board member. First off, Patty, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you both for having me. What an honor this is to be on your show, The Heart of Advice. I just love the name of your show. Thank you for having
me. It's so fun.
We do too.
It'll be fun.
Well, speaking of the Heart of Advice, what drew you into the profession? And can you just talk a little bit about your trajectory and how you ended up here?
Sure. So what drew me into it? Well, you guys know me. Many people who are listening or watching probably know the story. I actually have no business background, no financial background. I used to be a nurse. I worked in oncology first and then was promoted into intensive care. And I suppose to answer your question, Connor, the real answer is, you know, I always felt like I always wanted to be financially secure. I grew up, I'm one of seven kids, I was fifth of seven, and my parents kind of live paycheck to paycheck. And boy, when they fought, they always thought about money. And I got to tell you, it kind of makes a kid, seven-year-old kid, feel a little insecure. And so here I was working at a hospital, working intensive care, getting my cost of living raises, and worried about, you know, wanting to have a family, buy a home. The same thing everybody kind of thinks about, wondering how I would ever get there. And, you know, it just kind of evolved into one of these things. I read somewhere that if chances are, if you like to do something as a hobby, because I like to look into this stuff on my own, chances are you'd probably be pretty good at it. And one thing led to another. And here we are today. I got my CFP. I worked for a firm in Philadelphia. Who really, they were on the forefront of what I would consider real financial planning, even though it was really kind of a closet insurance shop. That's the way it was way back then. So that's kind of what drew me in. I wanted to learn how to do this stuff for myself and my family. And I figured if I can help enough people get what they want, maybe I'll get what I want as well. In terms of the trajectory, I'll give it to you straight. I flew under the radar for the longest time. Nobody ever knew that we even existed. And frankly, I was working out of the basement of my home because I am the mother of four kids. Nobody really knew about Patty Brennan. And eventually, I did start Key Financial in 1990. And I just was doing what I thought I would want if I were the client. And lo and behold, I guess one might say I got discovered. Was still working out of the basement, still slumping over, you know, doing all the meetings, doing the planning, reviewing, doing all that stuff myself, hiring people one by one and building my team. So that's really the answer. It was kind of a very low, you know, keep doing what I was doing, go through all the different crises, focus on the clients, and then the hockey stick growth did occur.
I'm just so impressed with your story, Patty. I really want to know, coming from your background in nursing, empathy and compassion really seem to be clearly part of your DNA. So how do you really strike that balance between offering emotional support and delivering the financial expertise that clients really need to make those tough decisions?
You know, it's a really good question. I think for whatever it's worth, I think empathy and compassion are important in this field. And I think it's really, to be honest with you, it's more compassion than empathy. So let me kind of use the nursing metaphor. If you're my patient and I'm sitting at your bedside, I have to know and understand everything about you. I have to understand what's normal for you and what got you sick, especially if you're in intensive care. Doctors take care of organs. The nurse takes care of the patient holistically. So if you start having a funky heart rhythm, I don't have time to call your doctor. I have to understand that that's not normal for you. Because to be honest with you, empathy is holding your hand, right? I'm sorry, but holding your hand is not going to save your life. Compassion is action-oriented. To the left of the monitor, I've got the lidocaine, 100 milligrams, already pulled up, along with 9 other different emergency drugs. I take the lidocaine, put it in your IV, and within about 30 seconds, you're back in normal sinus rhythm. But here's the thing, and this is what makes, you know, our industry, I think this is the key differentiator. When you wake up, because you've passed out, right? I've got to explain in words that you can process and understand what just happened, right? And that's what we do. It's not just about the portfolio or the insurance needs. It's about the taxes, the cash flow, their goals, what they want for their children. Holistic planning that's action-oriented. That, I think, is the key differentiator.
Well, I love your definition of compassion. And as a, in my household, my dad was a physician and I have a sister who's a nurse, an ICU nurse, actually. So hearing these analogies like really stick with me and hopefully with our listeners as well. So,
and by the way, the physicians of the world, the best ones are the ones that have the good bedside manner, right? The communicators. The ones that understand that it isn't just about the organs and the treatment plan and the chemo and all of that. It's understanding how that patient might be feeling and maybe even freaking out inside.
For sure. Definitely.
I think you hit on a very important topic, and it sounds like that you've kind of parlayed that experiences as being of a nurse to a lot of probably how you're delivering some of your financial plans. And if we can just transition a little bit, you and your team are pretty well known for making some very complex financial topics feel much more approachable, understandable, personal. How do you kind of weave some of the firm tenets plus your experience into your approach to building trust and working with clients that kind of goes beyond just the financial plan, the analysis, the recommendation? And then how do you think about doing that, not just for your clients, but more broadly for the firm's clients?
It's a great question. And to me, my role here is to mentor my team because, yeah, I might have this background, but anybody can do this. Anybody can do this. The first step, I think, is you have to do the work. You got to have substance. It can't be all fluff. So when you do the work, you just go into that meeting that much more confident. So to me, as the CEO of this firm, my goal is to give my team the tools so that they can feel confident, for them to know that they're doing the best thing for that client. And, you know, I think personalizing it is also really important. You know, we don't want the boilerplate crap. Right? You can take boilerplate and personalize it also, which is frankly what we do, because you got to scale this, right? That's the beauty of software like eMoney. I got to tell you, that has been a game changer for me, for Key Financial, and for our clients, is to be able to personalize it. They look at their plan. They look at the data that we've put in for them. It's got the kids' names there. It's got where the kids want to go to school. It's got their home address and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's, you can tell when they look at the system, it's all about them. So that's really, I think, what's important. You got to have the substance and you got to have the tools to be able to know the right thing to do for that particular client.
As a longtime user of eMoney, we definitely want to get your perspective on eMoney, but I'd say more broadly for financial technology. But before we go there, can we just click one level down? Key Financial has a running 98% client retention rate year over year, which it speaks, number one, to your firm culture, the way that you've mentored many folks on your teams, as well as the relationships that you've built with your clients. Can you just go kind of one level deeper to some of the processes that you've put into place to get to that level of personalization, to build those relationships, and or the way that you've been able to build enough scale inside the practice to deliver advice at that personalized level to that many clients?
Yeah, it's a good question because you can't really wing this stuff, right? When someone comes in and they want help, you can't wing it and you got to make it easy. Those are the two most important things. I think for me, I always do the first meeting. Okay, because I want to make sure it's a good fit and communicate how we work and how we go about doing this and make sure it's a good fit. The way that we do it, we have workflows, we have processes. I can go into detail if you'd like on the process. For example, when a client calls in, they talk to somebody, they talk to Katie. Katie finds out what they're looking for, yada, yada, yada. It's not really pre-qualifying. It's just understanding what their interests are and how we might be able to help. We offer free consultation to anybody really who calls in. It doesn't mean that we're going to take them on as a client. And I do those meetings. I just think it's easy for me to do. It's an hour of my day. And it's a wonderful message that is sent out into the world, right? That we're legit and that we're here to help. And I really do help them. As part of that, we send them a questionnaire that gives us the information that we would need if we wanted to do a real financial plan. So they are told, here's the thing. If you give us this checklist in advance, the questionnaire, your tax return, your statements, yada, 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 we promise we will look at it in advance. And when Patty meets with you one-on-one, she's going to hit the ground running. So it's going to totally focus on you. It's amazing, just that message, people fill it out and they send it in advance. So we have a file, I get the file in advance, I know what I'm walking into. So that's number one. Step number two is when I'm in that meeting, my goal is, and I tell them this, I say, you know, my goal today is to, you know, uncover or share three things that I observed that maybe you didn't know about or may not have understood. And that's my goal. And people are like, wow. And it's so interesting about that because towards the end, after I've kind of done all of that, they say they're waiting for a pitch. And I say, you know what? Here's the deal. I've shared a few ideas. This is low hanging fruit. You don't need to pay us or frankly, anybody else. Go do those things and keep in touch. Let me know how you're doing. And they walk out of there. And I got to tell you, they walk out of there like, wow, I can't believe you just gave us so much of your time, gave us really tangible action items, and you're not going to charge us. You're not going to give us a pitch. And it's really it's a wonderful thing. I think that's the reason we get so many referrals, because somewhere I kind of managed to tell people, hey, listen, here's what you can do for us. Spread the word. There are so many people in our own community that don't even realize that we exist. And if you introduce people to our firm, they're going to be treated exactly as I've treated you today. They'll be safe. And it's just a good thing to do. It feels good. And it's the truth. So basically, that's one outcome. Outcome number one is they go off and do their own thing. It's amazing how many times they call us 5 years later and say, okay, we're ready to meet with you again, and we'd like to hire you. we get so many people that way. It's pretty interesting. And we keep track of that. I'm a pretty big person. I like to keep track of the metrics. Let's say that they have a need and I've uncovered things, but I can't really say, okay, you're good, go off and do your own thing, because there's some analytical work that needs to be done. That's when I bring up eMoney on the screen and I say, let me explain to you how we would answer these questions for you. And I go through a sample case. I go through the scenarios. We've pre-built Luke and Jen's sample with different scenarios and all the different what ifs, you know, and it's, people love that. They absolutely love that. And then they say, how can we get that? How can you do that for us? And so, you know, so we talk about that. And then we talk about the process of doing a real financial plan. And I give them the heads up right then and there. After this meeting, you know, I do this one meeting. I think it's important for all of you to know, do you guys to know that, you know, see this road in the middle of my forehead, right? Okay. For the record, I've earned every wrinkle I have, and they're staying, by the way. And I think it's important as a fiduciary for you, the client, pretend I'm talking to the client right now, to know that if something happens to me, everything will continue seamlessly. So you might as well meet the people who are actually doing the work. And so I explain right then and there, you know, Eric Furman is our chief planning officer. He will review the plan and the recommendations with you. And then at the end of that meeting, we'll decide. Does it make sense for you to become an ongoing client of Key Financial, or is that enough? It's going to be a joint decision. We're not going to even offer that to you unless we can feel like we can justify our presence in your lives. Now, we're not going to justify it every quarter of every year, right? Typically, with planning, with wealth management, it tends to come in chunks. And what's interesting about it, and I'll share a story, a call I had earlier today. A lot of times the value that clients receive has nothing to do with rate of return, has nothing to do with saving money on taxes. It's the intangible stuff. So that's basically it. There's lots of steps in between, lots of touch points, things of that nature. You know, I'm running an ICU unit. Even though our clients aren't sick, they just need help. They want help. And we're here to do that.
They need that triage, basically, coming in and then going through there. Yeah. I love the fact that you meet with every client initially. In academia, usually when you have those initial like classes for going into the major, they have like their most you know, well-known professor or like charismatic professor do that. And so yeah. I love that that's how you kind of set that up for those. But you didn't mention eMoney. So I do have a question about it. So we really want to know how we want your perspective on fintech. And can you share more about what you and your team use and how you use it and how you think about the evolution of technology?
Absolutely. I'm an open book. I'm here to share whatever you guys want to know. Happy to do that. So I am a long-term user. I will tell you how long-term. So I met with the founder of the company in, let's see, 2001 timeframe. And they were in an office, little office, just a few employees, et cetera, et cetera. And they were kind of pitching me on it. I said, God, this is so amazing, but you're not there yet. So years passed, 2007. They worked on the thing. I gave them a couple of ideas on, you know, it would be really, really great if you did A, B, and C. So anyway, by 2007, they were ready and so was I, because it was very clear, because we've always done financial planning and comprehensive wealth management. That's kind of in my DNA. But the technology back then was not conducive to scale at all. So the evolution of this was, to me, the biggest thing was, and where eMoney really set themselves apart, was aggregation. But here's the thing. Aggregation is fine. It's wonderful, yada, yada, yada. But that's just an accounting function. The real value is to be able to pull all that data and then run the scenarios to model what a client's future could look like. Because we all know, look what's happening right now. You know, to date, timestamp this, right now we're in the middle of this tariff action, and it's making people feel really uncomfortable, right? So we get to say to our clients, not to worry. We've modeled this already. We've modeled a 30% decline in the market and your portfolio to figure out what your risk capacity is. But I don't think people really know what their risk tolerance is until they're in it. And frankly, the last time we went through a crisis, they were in a different season of life. They may have been working. They may have been younger. They may be retired right now. So it feels different. So risk tolerance, I don't think that can be measured. I do think risk capacity can, and that's very personal, right? So it's wonderful to have a tool to model out what would happen. Would you be okay if this happened? And for them to understand it and for us to make decisions in advance. In that first meeting, I tell everybody, I say, you know, here's the thing. I want to understand what's going to make this thing fail. I want to understand where you're vulnerable. Because when we model that, if we understand that you're vulnerable for long-term care or something like that, we can take steps to mitigate the impact of something like that on your financial affairs. So that's basically the way that we communicate. And that's exactly what eMoney helps us to do. So I don't know if that answers your question. It's a long answer. Where are we today? I would say that the innovation, I will tell you that you guys, eMoney was the only game in town as far as I was concerned for many, many years. You're probably feeling some competitive pressures. I think innovation is long overdue in this industry, in fintech. It's been kind of, I mean, none of the technology talks to each other. You got to go here and there and here and there. We built some tools internally to pull, to scrape data. So I have a one-page scorecard for every client we have. I can walk into a meeting with one piece of paper. I have everything I need to know. It's pulling from eMoney. It's pulling from our portfolio system. It's pulling from our CRM, everything that I need to know. Birthdays, kids' names, the hip surgery, everything I need. So that's the stuff that's been lagging is the innovation. It's coming, but it's not there yet. I'm really excited about OCR, the ability for, you know, statements to be fed into a system and they get read. I think we've got to be very careful, or if I may say, you guys in the fintech industry have to be very careful because there are people out there, I think, that are they're over-promising and under-delivering. And that's been going on for about 5 years now. There are systems that we have demoed and chosen not to move forward because they weren't there yet. And, you know, I'm a bit of a nerd, but I feel like I'm making a promise to clients that if we're using certain technology, that it's going to be accurate, that it's not going to be a fairy tale. We don't do fairy tales. And Connor, you weren't there when I first got the system, but I will tell you, I drove your engineers crazy before we adopted it. And that was back in 2007. Drove them crazy. You talk about kicking the tires and lifting the hood. I wanted to understand exactly how these calculations were being done. The thing that I appreciated and have appreciated about the relationship is that on your own, and maybe with a few nudges from Patty Brennan, you guys just kept on getting better and better. So anyway, anybody that's listening, go ahead and nudge away, because these companies want to make our lives better and to increase their own market share. So message to you guys, OCR, because this data input crap that we have to do, it's for the birds.
Amen.
Amen is right.
I do think there is a lot that's happening out there, and I would just echo the sentiment. A lot of, you know, eMoney is here in the business of enabling more and better advice, and we can only do that through advisors. And if we're not developing stuff that helps enable that advice, quality, quantity, whatever it is, then we'd want to know about it. I do want to hit on one specific spot there. You talked about OCR, and I think more generally, you know, AI and ML are the more known terms for some of the, you know, underneath technology that you're talking about. But you guys use a lot of tech. You've built a lot of processes, both in-house and vendor relationships. How do you think about what is Key's approach to staying current and deciding what is worth adopting and implementing into the process?
It's a great question. I got to tell you that it's, for me, again, I'm a nerd. I'm really curious. I'm always looking at ways to make my team's lives easier and better and so that they can focus on what really makes the difference, which is giving good advice to our clients, not doing data entry, not doing that kind of stuff. But again, you know, you're right. AI is out there. Machine learning is out there. I am also very nervous about cybersecurity and all of that. So we've got to be really careful about the relationships and the vendors that we choose to work with. And there's a lot of, you know, the SEC in New York is coming out with some new standards that we're all going to have to adhere to. I think that's a good thing. You know, you've got the note-taking systems that we've got a note-taking system. This is kind of interesting. The note-taking systems that are out there for the advisors that are listening, be really careful that it's a summary that is sent to you and that no recording or transcript is saved, because you got to really be careful about client privacy and HIPAA and, you know, who's using that data for their own machine learning. So for us, we use a technology where there is no recording that is saved. There is no transcript. Even if we wanted access to it, we can't get it because it's evaporates. We just get the summary. And then we have to review the summary and make sure that it's accurate, because it's not always right. So we have to do the proper edits, et cetera, before we put it into our CRM. Every client of Key Financial has eMoney. Okay. We start, that's the hub of every relationship. Okay. From there, we also use Redtail. The reason I like Redtail is not because of its price or anything like that. It's because, again, I want to consolidate the tools. So what I like about Redtail is it captures all that client's emails back and forth. It has the Redtail imaging for that client, so we can put that all their documents right there with the client records. So it makes it easier. You're not going here and there and here and there. I really like that. We use Jump for the note-taking. Because again, it's programmed so that it doesn't keep any of the data. What I also like about Jump is they've built the templates so that the things that we would normally be putting in our notes, it automatically captures it in that organizational way. I love that. So we don't have to, you know, edit and put it the way that we like it. Our portfolio management system is Addepar. Addepar purchased Advisor Peak for the trading system. So that's how we're able to scale $2.5 billion and make trades accordingly. But we still keep it customized because my team, they've got eMoney on one monitor and the portfolio on the other. The eMoney is what drives the decisions. That's why we manage all 2.5 internally. We're not offloading that to third-party managers. So I have to have really good tools.
Patty, you have witnessed a lot of change in the financial planning industry, especially when it comes to opportunities for women. And as you might know, women make up 24% of all CFP professionals, and that number is growing, which we love. But I, as a mother of four, I want to know how you really worked on that successful career and what advice you'd give to new CFP working moms to navigate the early stages of their career.
I think part of it is, managing expectations. We manage expectations for our clients. I think it's important for women in this industry to manage their own expectations. I think that, you know, I think there's been a real injustice communicated to many young people today, and that is this whole thing about work-life balance. I got to tell you, it doesn't exist. To me, it's not work-life balance. It's work-life choices with consequences. Hey, I chose to bring four children into this world. They didn't ask to come in. We chose to bring them into the world. So that was a choice that I made. So while they were little kids, I was not going out every other night. I was not, you know, it was work and my family. That's it. I was a very lopsided tire. And I had to be creative in terms of how to do that. So it was work-life choices. You know, I worked out of the basement of my home. My team, many people who still work for me today, came into the back door, raided the refrigerator on the way down to the basement to work all day. That's literally how it worked. So, you know, you got to kind of think creatively as a young mom. And it's okay. That's the only thing I can say. Be kind to yourself. You're not going to be perfect. The kids aren't going to, you know, look perfect every single day. I remember going to a conference, and I love this conference and this woman. She was up on the stage and she said, you know, I heard a tip at a different conference and I thought this woman was crazy until I tried it. And the tip was, you know, getting kids ready for school in the mornings is unbelievable. Getting them dressed, they're fighting you. I don't want to go to school. I don't want to. So basically this woman said, I started putting my kids into their, I put them to bed with their school clothes already on. How's that for a time saver? No fights in the morning. They wake up, they're already dressed, they get something to eat, grab their lunch, they're out to the bus. That's an easy tip, right? So, you know, don't should on yourself. No shoulds are allowed, okay? Be creative, think outside the box, you figure it out. And it's all going to be okay. The kids are going to be great. They're going to grow up. You're going to set an example for them. That, to me, is the coolest thing about being a working mom is that, you know, and I will tell you that I've got two daughters and two sons. And this is a true story. I said to one of my daughters, I said, God, what was it like growing up with a mom like me? You know, I was literally, I can remember being in the kitchen. My daughter was talking to me and she's like, Mom, did you hear what I just said? That I was, you know, I will tell you that no matter where I was, I always felt like I needed to be the other place. When I was working, I felt like I needed to be home with the kids. When I was home with the kids, I felt like I needed to be working. The guilt that we put on ourselves is ridiculous. Enough of that crap. You're doing a great job. You know, be kind to yourself and understand that it's a season of life. It's just a season of life. It will get easier and everybody's going to be okay. And you don't have to be a superstar, by the way. You'll have that time too.
I think that's really good advice. And I love that your colleagues would come in the house and raid your fridge and then go in the basement. That's awesome. Yeah.
Oh, you know what? We have an office building. I still have refrigerators that are filled because everybody wants, you know, the way they just, you know, they're putting in the e-money and they're getting up and running, getting something to eat. They need a distraction. And by the way, I learned that from e-money because e-money's headquarters was stashed with candy and food and all that stuff.
It's true. It's true. Yeah.
If there's one thing you worry about, Patty, what would it be?
Okay. Full disclosure, and it's something that is just does keep me awake at night. It is this whole cybersecurity, deep fake stuff. You know, artificial intelligence is great until it isn't. And we have to be really diligent. Now, I know everybody listening and watching today, they've got all the cybersecurity and the firewalls and all that kind of stuff, but our clients do not. So our biggest risk is not ourselves, it's our clients. So be very careful. I will tell you guys that my most recent quarterly letter, I talked about all of this and I gave specific examples in my letter. That's another sidebar thing that kind of I think people appreciate. I really think it's important to communicate. I have been sending a letter every 90 days for 35 years. Clients really seem to like the letters. There's, you know, it could be about tax law, it could be about tariffs, it could be about this. And there's usually, it's warm and fuzzy. It's my way of thanking them for their, you know, their business and the relationship that we have and the confidence that they have in us. But anyway, the last one was about cybersecurity. And in that letter, I'm not big on talking about problems without a solution. So the problem is cybersecurity, emails, yada, yada, yada. Okay. The solution is from now on, we have this wonderful tool that we have given you called Key Money that has this thing called the Vault. It's digital storage that is super secure. From now on, don't email us stuff. All you have to do is launch it into your vault, put it in the shared folder. We'll get a message that you put something there, and it is perfectly secure. So to answer your question, it's cybersecurity that I worry about. And thanks to eMoney, you've solved it for us and for our clients.
So as you may or may not know, eMoney is celebrating our 25th anniversary this year. I know that as a longtime user, you've seen the technology evolve quite a bit over the last 25 years for us, but I think pretty close to that as far as you and Key Financial's use of the technology. I guess first off, what is the most significant change you've seen in the industry over the last 25 years?
It's a great question. I think for my experience, I think when eMoney kind of cornered the market on aggregation, that was the beginning of changing an entire industry. Now, you guys were the first ones to do it. It wasn't perfect initially. It improved over time. It continues to improve. And other companies have joined forces. You can, go on to brokerage firms and, mutual fund companies and aggregate. But to me, aggregation is an accounting function. It's not real wealth management. It's not real financial planning. And I think what set eMoney apart from my perspective was that you pull in the data, but the data then populates the modeling. I tell clients all the time, listen, here's the scoop. You're not a pie chart, right? It's not just about the portfolio. What do you want to do? Your money's a means to an end. Let's figure out what do you want? What do you see, in the future for your life? What do you want to have happen? And by the way, I want to know what's going to make this thing fail. I want to understand where you're vulnerable. And it was eMoney that came up with the ability to run different scenarios based on the aggregation, based on the assets, run different scenarios as well as stress tests. What's going to make this thing fail? Because look at where we are right now. Uncertainty is all around us. You guys have been in business for 25 years. I've been in business for a little bit longer. Uncertainty is here today. It's always been here. Markets are up, markets are down. We got the financial crisis. We've got a worldwide pandemic. Now we've got the tariffs. There's always been something to worry about. But thanks to eMoney, we've already modeled that. We've already modeled bear markets. We've already modeled. We never know what the catalyst is going to be to create the uncertainty. It's always different. That's why markets go down as much. That's why interest rates go up. We never know what the catalyst is going to be. But what we're able to say, and what we do say is, we never know what's going to happen in the future, but we know what to do when it does. And we understand the impact on you, Mr. or Mrs. Client, personally. That's what really matters.
It's like, I love that. I do want to ask you, since you are a longtime user, Patty, do you remember... Obviously, you remember using eMoney for the very first time, but from your perspective, what's the most impactful piece of the platform that's evolved since you started using it?
The most impactful piece of the platform. When the Decision Center first came out, we didn't use it at all. And I will tell you that for us, one of the things that we have been kind of complacent with is really keeping up to date with all the latest and greatest things that you guys are coming out with. And I do have a financial planning team and have assigned that to them because I can't do it all. That's what they do. That's their job. What's interesting about that is the more that we've learned about the Decision Center, oh my goodness, that is phenomenal. For me, the Decision Center, the coolest thing about that is the Monte Carlo analysis that takes the compound annual growth rate and does the Monte Carlo based on their longevity. What's the probability that both people are going to be alive, that one person is going to be alive? So it keeps it relevant and real for them based on their ages, based on their portfolio. It's not something that's based on an index portfolio type of thing. That's what I love the ability to personalize these things. It makes it, you know, it makes it much more, you know, the clients really buy in a lot more because of it.
Can you share a specific moment, a breakthrough, a conversation, a relationship where you feel like technology made a real difference in a client's financial success?
I would say that it is not just one, it's just across the board. Because when we are in a crisis, and you know, as you can tell, I've been doing this a long time, I've been through a few of them. Okay. When we got e-money, it was 2007, then we had the financial crisis. I had already been through the tech bubble, and before that, the crash of 87. So it's kind of interesting. Experience doesn't make a person, but it does help with judgment. It does help with the decisions that you make, I think. So the crash of 87 happened. It went down 22% on that Monday after being down 5% on Thursday and 6% on Friday, and then 22%, right? And the recession that followed and the books that came out. The Great Depression of 1990 was the number one bestseller on the New York Times. So that was a really scary time. And then fast forward, we did go through a recession, but then we had the 90s, right? And it was straight up. And we went through the experience of having clients ask us why we didn't have everything in this one mutual fund that had 20 growth stocks, right? You probably know the name of the fund. And trying to talk somebody into rebalancing into small cap value, for example, was like, why in the world would we ever want to go into something like that when it's done nothing and selling off the thing that the only thing that's made any money in the portfolio? And then the next year, of course, large growth went way down. Small cap value was up 23%. So, you know, those experiences and being able to tell that story really helps when we're going through a crisis. But I think that for me, the real game changer is to be able to model these things in advance so that when they happen, clients aren't freaking out. Because we get to say, you know, remember when the last time you were in the conference room, remember when we were talking about your financial plan and we brought up the different scenarios and the what ifs? What if this happened? What if that happened? And by the way, the what ifs are also not just things out of everybody's control, which are, you know, pandemics and tariffs and stock market crashes and things of that nature. That's out of our control. And even, you know, illnesses, premature death, et cetera. Those are the things that people worry about. Let's run those numbers. If that happened, would you be okay? So we get to communicate during the crisis. We've already modeled this. We understood. We don't know when these things are going to happen. So therefore, we just assume that the next wicked bear market, the next terrible thing in your life is going to happen tomorrow. And so we are planning, we are reserving, we understand what you need from your portfolio from a cash perspective. We understand your taxes. We know you want to move to Florida. We know you want to be near your kids. We understand that. We're ready because we have to be. We want to be ready for anything. We are financial planners. And that's how we manage wealth.
Got to be in the mindset of that the next thing could happen the next day. So I understand that for sure.
Yep. And we don't know what it's going to be. So be ready.
No, we have no idea what it's going to be.
Yeah.
The pandemic for sure threw us off.
And you know what? Sometimes just communicating simply, you know, okay, so we've got this amazing tool called eMoney. We call it Key Money because it's Key Financial. Thanks to you guys, we get to white label it. But, you know, we've got Key Money. We've got Plan A. That's the baseline. believe me when I tell you, we also have plan B, plan C, plan D. There's 26 letters in the alphabet, Mr. and Mrs. Client. We got to be ready. And we are. And you get to say that with confidence. They feel that confidence. You bring it up on the screen. You share it on their portal. It's a beautiful thing.
I mean, making sure that enough Patty to get around to everyone, I think, is not possible. But between Forbes, Barron's, EY, you on the conference circuit, just attending, you on the conference circuit, presenting, there's quite a few places for our listeners to find you and come run down whatever follow-up questions that I'm undoubtedly we've generated throughout the discussion today. But I did want to just talk to you about your book, Am I Going to Be Okay? Can you talk a little bit more about it? Kind of what's one or two takeaways that you'd like listeners to get from it?
Sure. So I'm going to give it to you straight because you know me, that's the way I work. It was probably the worst decision I've ever made. Honestly and truly, it was one of those things. I was speaking at one of the major events. It was at Forbes, and I got a phone call the following Monday, and the person on the other line said, "You know, I'm so and so and so and so. We've been following you, and we're wondering if you have a book in that brain of yours." And I said, "No, I do not. I don't have time to go to the bathroom, much less write a book. I do not have a book." That's honestly what I said to him. He said, "You know, we kind of think different. We think you're fascinating. We love the way that you communicate. Why don't you just try to put a pen to a piece of paper and see what you can come up with?" So I did, you know, whatever. And it turned out to be an interesting experience for me. It's very hard. It's really hard to write a book. I'm just going to tell you, because I didn't want it to be one of these things that, you know, drones on and talks about all the things you should do, et cetera. It's really boring and uses a lot of big words. I wanted it to be relatable with lots of stories, et cetera. And one of the pitches behind this whole idea was, "Oh, don't worry, Patty. We know that you're busy. We know that you've got your own company, yada, yada, yada. We'll give you a ghostwriter. We'll make it easy. It'll be seamless. Piece of cake. This is what we do." Well, okay, here's the deal. Ghostwriter number one didn't work out. So they got me a new ghostwriter. Ghostwriter number two, a little bit better. Well, it didn't quite work out. So then at that point, I was already deep in it. And of course, I made a commitment. So I said, okay, screw it. I'm going to just write this thing myself. And I started from scratch. And I wrote the thing myself many times over, by the way, many times over. So it was a process. It wasn't easy. And by the way, for whatever it's worth, it is not for marketing. Don't do it because you think it's going to help for marketing. It does not. I don't think it does. I mean, and I will tell you that my book has been number one on Amazon since it was published in November. Every single solitary week. So, but that's not really why I did it. I just wanted to kind of document our process, how we do things. And what's interesting about that, you might be interested in this, and you guys probably don't even know this, but I had to get permission from eMoney because I use some of your graphs because that's what we use. So if you read the book, you're going to see cash flow, the 5-year cash flow report, the reports that I love and that I think communicate so effectively. They are in the book. Anyway, that's how it all started. That's the way it is. And it's not marketing. It's not any of that. It was just to document the process.
So just make sure you know what you're getting yourself into.
That is the most important. Just make sure you know what you're getting into. And I will tell all of you, it took me 6 years beginning to end. So it's not something you're going to do overnight. Not necessarily. You know, unless you're going to stop and drop everything and just focus on that. I learned a lot about myself in the process too. I didn't realize how particular I am. I never thought of myself as a perfectionist, but it is what it is. When you put your name on something, I think that some of that's naturally going to occur.
totally understand that. As an author of curriculum, that perfectionism definitely comes out when you're like, even Connor and I today were just talking about, he reviewed some of our curriculum and I was like, oh my goodness. So just to hear that feedback, I totally understand. But Patty, as we wrap up, I love your candor. And I just want to ask you, how would you define the heart of advice when it comes to financial planning?
Oh, good question. So here's the deal. I'm going to answer your question with a story. Something that happened this morning. So I have a very large client, you know, worth a lot of money, yada, 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 has been a client, came from one of the wirehouses, et cetera. And he basically reached out to me yesterday and said, can you give me a call? I'd like to talk to you about something. So I'm trying to figure out, because we had a meeting about a month or two ago, trying to figure out what was on his mind. Basically, what was on his mind was his wife wanted to do some gifting to family members. And he was worried about what that might do to the family dynamic. And he specifically said, I've experienced this in the past, and I'm worried that they will resent us because we've had a level of success, because they've got a lot of success. And, you know, and apparently this, you know, every family's messed up. And I told him, I said, you know what? For whatever it's worth, I have yet to meet a normal family. Family dynamics are unique. We all think that we're alone. We're not. Everybody's dysfunctional. So not to worry. Okay. And he immediately, I could just feel the weight come out, like, oh, you know, because, you know, one of the things that I like to tell people when they come in is you're in the no judgment zone here. Let me tell you about my family. Let me tell you about my life. And sometimes showing that vulnerability is a good thing because it makes them feel like, okay, they're not alone. But anyway, long story short, in this particular example, okay, it had nothing to do with his, you know, millions and millions of dollars in his portfolio that we manage. It had nothing to do with his taxes that he just filed yesterday, which were a lot. It had nothing to do with the estate plan that we are working on with his attorney and the corporations that he owns and the entities and all that and the CTA and all the stuff that we've guided him on. It had to do with this family dynamic. And because we're holistic, I was able to get to the heart of the advice, my heart to his, and to say to him, hey, listen, here's the deal. Pretend his name is John. When they go low, you go high. You know, it's that what Michelle Obama said. If they become resentful, if they exhibit behaviors that are not really what you would expect when you're giving somebody, you know, thousands of dollars, understand it, recognize that it's there, and go ahead and still do it. Still give it to them. Stay high. Stay on that high road. And he ended the call with the following statement. He said, you know, Patty, he said, I really appreciate being able to talk to you about this stuff. The people that I was with before, there's no way I would have shared what I shared with you just now. He said, I really appreciate being able to talk this through and brainstorm with you on it. And I said to him, I said, you know what? You do whatever you want to do. I'm just giving you my best judgment based on other families we've helped in the past. And he said, that means everything in the world to me. That's it. That's the heart of advice.
I love that. That's a wonderful story, Patty. I think you being a nurse initially really helps bring out that trust building with clients. And I think that's beautiful. So,
you know, what's really interesting, for whatever it's worth, I actually use 4-letter words in the conversation today. Again, be real with people. You know, I'm not stuffy. I'm here in a turtleneck shirt. I've got Skechers on, by the way. I've got sneakers on. And people really appreciate that. You know, be real. Be vulnerable, because that's, you know, it makes people feel more comfortable. And when they can get deep like that and reveal things like that, you talk about sticky, that person, they will be clients for life.
And it sounds like you've got some real good clients for life. So I just want to thank you, Patty, for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
I'm going to wrap it up. But, you know,
I hope it's been helpful. I hope there's been a few tips that people can glean from it. And thank you. Thank you for including me on this.
Of course.
The Heart of Advice podcast is produced by eMoney Advisor, a leading provider of technology solutions and services that help people talk about money. Learn more at eMoneyAdvisor.com, where you can find additional resources for advisor success, including the Heart of Advice blog, as well as eBooks, CE webinars, and events.